Sometimes you like Russian food. That happens
with all things. Okay, welcome to Extra Features, episode 78. I'm Kevin.
I'm Simon.
I'm Karen.
Intern.
And Dad.
Is that Bob the intern?
Well, we're having this discussion again.
No, it used to be Bob the intern. I quit.
Yes, he's dropped the Bob. He's no longer known as a human being. He's just a
so we're back to one of these job. Great spotlight episodes, Kel.
Yes, due to the success of the
Nicole Kidman
one, we've decided to put the spotlight on another Aussie, in this case an Aussie-American.
Now, this was the lady's choice.
Yeah.
This was the lady's choice. I would like to tell you what our next spotlight episode is, but I forgot that was the other question I had.
Oh, yeah, I don't know who we are.
I wrote it on my list of questions to ask you guys. I forgot, but we'll get
there. The spotlight person is Karen.
Mel Gibson.
And this is part one, because the guy has done, he's done 43 movies.
43 movies, and he's so also a director now.
He's a director, so I think that was sort of lumped in with the 43. But we're going to look at 30 movies
overall.
Two episodes.
Oh, yeah. My God.
So some of them will be pretty quick because we may not have ever seen them. No one will have seen any of them. Or they're just not worth much more than a throwaway sentence or something like that. So we don't want to keep this going for 3 hours, right? So
hopefully not. I do have to worry.
All right. Got it. We need to talk fast.
All right. So now Mel actually made his debut in 1977. In some Australian pictures that we would never ever be able to find anywhere. So
I did look.
Yeah, I figured you probably did. But let's kick it off with the movie that really made him an international superstar, and that's Mad Max from 1979.
Yeah, it was weird. I saw this movie when I was a kid. Like, I remember being really awesome Road Warrior first. And didn't get Mad Max. I never really liked it as a kid. I don't know, maybe it was just too slow. But rewatching it, I gotta say, I really like Mad Max.
Mm.
Sitting down watching it a few weeks ago, I'm like, wow, I missed this as a kid. This thing went right over my head.
Yes,
right.
That's exactly it.
Like, gone. And then I'm like, wow, this movie is very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't remember. I remember his wife dying as a kid. That's what all I remember going, this is kind of boring as a kid.
I mean, this is a movie that had the balls to kill a baby.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just, you know, in movie storytelling, you do not kill babies.
Yeah. Right.
I have a question about Mad Max.
Mm-hmm.
Is it kind of almost starting on post-apocalyptic?
You know, I think the impression I get is that it's on the verge of the end of days.
Yeah.
They're still trying to keep, like, it's Australia, so obviously other things haven't quite reached Australia. Although, I don't think they really make much mention of it. Except that society is crumbling, and there are, you know, for one reason, this is one of the things we enjoyed about this Australian movie documentary, is that for some reason in Australian movies of the 80s, they love to have roving packs of punks just causing trouble on the highways. And this is really the first big one. And he's a cop, Max is a cop, that's out to stop these highway
robbers. The Night Ranger!
Yeah.
Which, I like I said, I really like this movie. I thought it was very heavy, the way they stalked her out in the forest and went hunting for his wife. Because, you know, when she went to town for, like, an ice cream, I think it was, for the kid.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an intense movie. His mom gunning them down and taking them out.
It's
heavy. Very, a play on society.
Mm-hmm.
Saying it's deteriorating, but Max is still above the law and trying to keep the law and keep everything normal, have a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
And they push him over the deep end.
Well, it's interesting, too, that usually, like, in a where you have, like, sort of the lone anti-hero in a post-apocalyptic wasteland, you have, like, you just start out in the middle of the story. Like, this actually shows you Max as an authority figure who goes rogue.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Max is pretty tough before this, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought for an Australian film, or a film from this period, with very limited budget, did an excellent job. I mean, that car scene with the Night Ranger and the babies running across the street, and the cars taking things out, plowing through, the Night Ranger's going, I thought it was very well shot for this time period, for being a very indie movie.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was very well shot, on very limited budget, obviously.
No, I agree with everything you're saying.
I thought it set up the for the sequel perfectly, but I don't think they were going to make a sequel. I thought this was going to be
it. They made the sequel because the movie found a following.
Home video just hit right around that time, and it was there. And people love that. There's something about that initial poster cover where it's just him in a cop outfit with his mask on, and it says, Maximum Force of the Future, Mad Max. It caught every kid's eye, basically. It was one of those movies like The Thing that we all went and rented in the early 80s when video rental became a big deal. So, you've never seen The Thing?
No.
Okay, chalk that up.
I knew that.
There's a prequel coming out next week, isn't there?
Soon, right now.
Yeah, so I'm going to watch them both.
Flowers is the hero.
I'll have them both done by the time the prequel comes out. I will see them.
Did you see Mad Max? Have you ever seen them?
No.
Wow, I don't know how you survived the 80s.
So I give this a thumbs up.
TV all the time.
Oh, yeah, for sure, thumbs up.
I don't love this movie. It's just too. It's just a cop drama to me. It's like a cop drama with cars and over-the-top crashes and stuff like that.
But I liked it.
I thought the follow-up was a little better, but I don't think that's right next on the list.
No.
So, anyway, it's a decent film. It's something to check out, and it's a very raw early performance. And he's so young in this movie. Oh, my God.
Oh, you can tell.
Yeah.
And you can hear the Australian accent completely.
Oh, yeah. Now, the next movie on our list is Gallipoli from 1981. And
you're not going to talk about Mad Max 2?
Oh, Mad Max 2, yeah. I guess that is the next one on the list. Sorry. For some reason, I thought there was stuff in between. All right, Mad Max 2, which is also known as The Road Warrior, which came out in 1981 as well. Any thoughts on that one? Also directed by George Miller.
I liked it. I'm sort of in the boat. I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't love the... hear me out. I liked them.
Listen to them.
It was a good movie. It kept your attention. I thought the second one was shot well. Also, it had that great Tina Turner song. So...
No, that was not the other one.
Is that Beyond Thunderdome?
Yeah, Beyond Thunderdome.
Okay. I'll back myself up, though. Yes, Simon.
Oh, I was just waiting for you to finish. Are you done? You just said that great Tina Turner song in Mad Max Road Warrior.
Sorry, I was getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, we don't need to talk to you again. Now, the greatest car scene.
Did I not bring brownies?
You did a great job bringing brownies. Just bring enough to feed Bob. That was really the issue.
Oh, you're so mean to me.
I'll pick up Kevin next.
This is the movie that immortalized sports gear.
I was getting to there. The guy in his S&M costume. Yes, Bob. Oh, I'm sorry, Karen. You weren't finished?
No, I'm done now.
Okay, it's good. Only okay? Are you on crack? The movie's fantastic.
No, for me, only okay.
Yeah, you just go back and watch your Painted Veil movies again. I'm sure somebody will appreciate it.
Next time I won't lend you any.
Lucky for me. This movie's fantastic. It's got one of the greatest car scene chases at the end.
So,
it's got a nice ironic twist at the end.
Max, it's a couple years later, I guess. Max is older. Society has crumbled further.
Society's done.
They're now little wasteland communities, like the one where they have a lot of gas.
Well, they are in an oil refinery or something.
Yeah.
Because they have to get the gas out. The bikers are trying. Always bikers. That's
the sports gear marauders want their gas. So
well, they need it. Because, I mean, anybody tries to escape them, they take them out and steal all their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to figure out who fixes all these vehicles. I mean, how many mechanics were they left after the post-apocalypse?
Well, maybe there's an intern.
Yeah. Oh, maybe that's it. Is that what you've been doing, intern? Fixing cars in Australia?
You know what I always thought of was Cuba. Because, like, if you've seen photographs of Cuba, it's 2011, and they're still driving cars that date from before the Cuban Revolution. Like, you will see cars from the 1950s driving because the people just are ingenious, and they figure out how to make do with what they have. I kind of guess that's the way it is in the Mad Max world, too.
Cool. So, I don't know, the feral kid storyline and the guy with the helicopter.
Oh, come on.
Those are kind of interesting elements. They to me, those elements make this more interesting than Mad Max.
Come on, the boomerang kid, when he throws the boomerang right at the beginning, the guy ducks and hits his guy's girlfriend right in the face and takes her out.
Mm.
And then that it's just awesome scene. And when the guy with the crazy guy that tries to rip off Max and drives around in his flying machine. Mm-hmm. Hey, that's the only part I broke. If I had to pick this movie apart, I had a problem with it. Why is he wanting to be friends with Max?
Because Max is powerful, confident, go-getting guy.
Well, that's what I think. It's a survivalist.
He's an 80s survivor.
But he's trying to, this whole movie, he's been trying to pick up that blonde chick.
Yeah.
Did you like the twist at the end of this?
What's that? What was the end of it? That it was the kid telling the story? And Max is left alone on the road again?
No, there's no gas in the vehicle that Max is driving. It's all sand.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, that was kind of cool.
Yeah, anyway, it's a decent science fiction movie. Of course, the popular
thing. And we never saw him again.
Yeah, until the next movie. All right, so thumbs up for this one. Do we like this one?
Karen?
I give it a thumbs up.
Two thumbs up, must buy.
I'd say one, maybe one and a half.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel.
Oh, backing up to, sorry, something about 10 episodes again. Deb had a homework assignment to see Fight Club.
Sorry, I haven't gotten around to it. I saw From Justin to Cali twice. I've done my penance.
I don't know.
The Fight Club is not penance.
How come
Fight Club is required watching?
No, I did my penance for failing to watch that, which is required.
Oh, no.
See, even if she's seen it, she's not allowed to talk about it.
That's
true. She's not allowed to talk about Fight Club.
That's true. So are we allowed to talk about Gallipoli?
Which it is a bunch. Yeah, Gallipoli is the next movie on our list, also from 1981. And,
is it here?
Yes. Two Australian sprinters face the brutal realities of war when they are sent to fight in the Gallipoli campaign in Turkey during World War I. Anybody seen it?
Awesome film.
Seen it.
Yeah, this is good stuff.
Yeah, when I got your list that wasn't supposed to happen for 2 weeks, I watched five Mel Gibson movies in 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of them.
He's quite good in this.
I thought he was excellent in this movie. I thought his friend, who's, I don't know the actor's name.
I believe his name is Mark Lee. He's an Australian actor who was actually at his prime when this movie was made.
I thought it was excellent. It was very, touched your heartstrings. And I thought the movie played well in that. Because when you, I didn't know anything about Gallipoli going into this movie. I knew nothing about it other than they ran each other during World War II and two sprinters. That's all really the blurb read. And it starts off like a buddy comedy. Like, they're having fun, they're racing against each other, they're getting to know each other, and then they decide to both enlist in the army, and then this movie just gets really dark. And they're like, what is going on? And it's all about the two guys in Gallipoli, and they're waiting, and it's about the Australian campaign trying to get over to Turkey. And what I didn't know, because I read the Wikipedia on this, just so I wanted to know more about it after watching this. Basically, they sent these Australian kids to die. Just keep going.
Oh, yeah. It was one of the biggest...
This massacres. Like,
yeah, it goes to the First World War.
There was no way they were going to win.
Mm-hmm.
They just sent them over the wall to die. You know, the guy said, you guys take
them. Ridge.
Yeah, just go.
Gas. Just go. Do it.
They're done. And that's exactly what happened in this movie. It was very heartbreaking. And then they finally figured out, no, they didn't make it. No, I don't know if this is real life, what happened. This,
I don't think they play actual...
Historical
characters.
Right.
But I would hazard a guess that their stories are very true to what the situation in existence was.
Well, the end of the movie is Gibson's the sprinter, and he gets the Chiefs. She said, okay, stop the running. His buddy's obviously in the last wave and dies in the very last scene of the movie. That's pretty much the end of the movie, and Mel Gibson's upset. And you know what? You like these characters, because mm-hmm. Nothing really happens during the movie of conflict.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, except for the train to Perth, it's probably their biggest conflict when they have to go across the desert and try to figure out how to get to Perth because they were jumping trains and missed it somehow. And that's really about it. But it's a touching. He is excellent.
I loved this movie.
So, I mean, I'm not saying it's a must. If you're a Gibson fan, I definitely say it's a must watch.
And it's when he's young, in his prime.
He is excellent. And you can see the development of Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if he really is acting in Mad Max or really acting in Road Warrior, but you definitely see an actor forming in this movie. Because you have to act in this part. He can't be hide behind
I mean, I definitely see a difference between him in the two Road Warrior films. There's a maturity in the second one.
He matures much more in this one, I think, than the Road Warrior films.
Well, this is more of a true tale.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to take on this persona or this larger-than-life character.
I think it showed he had acting chops.
Honestly, I've seen this movie several times. Mm-hmm. And I would say, not even just a Mel Gibson fan, I think if you like war films, and, you know, something that is based on a historical event, because they captured it really, really well, shot very well, and it was made on a very small budget at the time, and maybe wasn't really seen as a wide release, but got most of its publicity because of the home video market that came to North America, and that's mm-hmm. how most North Americans saw it, as a rental.
Mm-hmm. Just to diverse off that topic, what's the next generation going to do? Are they going to be all Netflix and computer-based? Because they're not going to know what a video store is.
Well, we still have video
stores. Well, we're always talking about the home video market. That's where all these films can go live.
Netflix is. It's a video
store. Is that what we're going to see now? But the thing is, when you went to the video store, you talked to the guy behind the counter. Oh, what's new? And what do you like? What's
that's
this?
Why you still do that. Podcasts
well,
the, extra features.
Well, that's it. So,
get your recommendations.
What
that's a good
getting are we replacing that guy now? Is that
we're the video store guys. We're the people who've seen all these movies, and we're trying to say...
Are we Jack Black and Be Kind Rewind?
No, we're not that bad.
Okay. We're Jack Black and High Fidelity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well,
oh,
actually...
I do agree that Evil Dead 2 is practically perfect movie.
Technically, Simon is Jack Black. Because that movie parallels the time in Simon's life when he worked at a comic book store.
It does.
And there's a Simon character. There's a guy who's a parallel to a guy we know named Doug.
Yeah, that's true.
And the owner is Peter, very much like the
oh, my God. It's like somebody came to my store and cloned us for that movie. Because I'm exactly like Jack Black.
I went to Paradise and watched you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, now, Mel's next film in chronology is something called Attack Force Z that I don't think anyone has seen.
I couldn't find it.
It was a
I did look.
It has Sam Neill and John Philip Law in it. So
was it on Netflix?
Yeah.
Was it on Netflix where you have?
No, I have not seen it. I don't think you can. It's like one of those really awful movies that no one has ever seen.
I'll find it one day.
Now, the next film on the list, though, is quite good, and that's The Year of Living Dangerously from 1982. He plays a character named Guy Hamilton, which is awesome, named after the Bond director. Plot is a young Australian reporter tries to navigate the political turmoil of Indonesia during the rule of President Sukarno with the help of a diminutive photographer played by Linda Hunt. And Sigourney Weaver is in this as a love interest.
I think it's her first movie, isn't it?
No, she was in Aliens.
Oh, Aliens is before this?
79.
Okay.
And let us not forget Linda Hunt winning the Best Supporting Actress Oscar
mm-hmm.
for playing a male role yeah. in this film. Well done.
And she's awesome in this movie. She's really good. And this is a great movie. I remember seeing this and liking it a lot when it came out. It's not something I've revisited much, but the acting in it is top notch.
I don't think... Sorry, Bob.
I actually have watched it again and again because this is one Mel Gibson movie I really like. Other than, let's say, I'm not a Mad Max or a
mm-hmm.
Lethal Weapon fan, but, Year of Living Dangerously, I really liked him. Linda Hunt really deserved the Oscar for the Best Supporting Actress because, I believe she was a man, and then I found out later, okay, in different roles she played, this is a woman.
It was a woman when she was in Doom, which came out 2 years later. She was the sad dad or something. This is an early film with Peter Weir as well, one of Australia's best directors. A solid, great looking film.
I just finished this the other day. Fantastic.
Had you seen it before?
No, it's my first time.
Okay. No, I'm not asking that as a criticism. As people know, we like to rib Simon on those movies that we've never seen. And I'm not doing that now.
I don't know why I would run across this. Unless this is when I need a show like Extra Features or other shows.
Mm-hmm.
Or Kevin, my video store court partner, to tell me you need to watch this film. And I do appreciate when Kevin or Karen, somebody that I consider cinephiles like myself, not saying you're not included, just that you watch different things than we do.
Yeah.
Like you focus on different eras. But it's not too often a film I would slip through me that I'd never heard of or didn't know anything about. And I love, love, love this movie.
What I loved about this movie, sort of like Kevin was saying, I was very unfamiliar with the subject matter. So not only was it just a great movie, but it really sort of brought to light something that I knew zero about.
Mm-hmm. I like the way they handled the Gibson character. Like, they definitely didn't treat him with kid gloves in this movie.
They threw him in.
And you watch him grow as a person, like, especially during the food riot, and they slice him up, and I'm like, what the? Because I was trying to figure out how to get out of that, and he's trying to get in, get interviews, but Linda Hunt helps him, and I never understand, because Linda Hunt's a very strange character in this.
Yes, and you don't know whether to trust her or not.
And you don't learn that till late, almost halfway through, you get that. Then you learn she takes notes on people, and this, and I'm like, interesting.
Yeah.
But at the end of this movie, when she can't get help for that kid she's helping, and she throws herself out the window, I'm like, what? Did not see that coming.
No, came out of left field.
And didn't know where this movie was really going. Like,
no.
It really, and it kind of, it does wrap up a little neatly, I think, at the end. Like, him trying to get to the airport.
But that could have been through editing, too, because it was quite a long movie.
Yeah, I like to see what was missing there, because I think they wrapped it up a little quick, but they were hitting a little long. I think they had to wrap it up.
It was a very, and especially going back to the 80s, you know,
It's 2 hours.
It's 2 hours, but, you know, stretching it, people's
nowadays,
attention spans
are going.
Nowadays,
it's 220, 230 nowadays. I really think the extra 20.
Exactly.
Because I think there's more that I've never seen, and I had more that I wanted to know. Because they kind of dropped that whole gun thing.
I'd actually say this movie needs to be revisited.
Like as an extended version or something.
Or maybe even a remake. I would take a remake of this without a problem, because I think there's more they could have developed, because they kind of wrap it up a little quick near the end. Because that gun thing is barely touched on.
Okay.
Because they go into the gun thing and sort of, that's it. Then the revolt happens in the government, and he's got to go.
Yeah.
So it's never really touched on what you think is the big reveal.
So it sounds like we've got a few thumbs up on this.
Definitely.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. I agree. Great movie. Next movie on our list is something called Mrs. Sokol. And synopsis on that is that Peter Sokol is the stuffy warden of a remote American prison around the turn of the century, the last century. His wife, Kate, played by Dan Keaton, finds herself attracted to prisoner Ed Biddle, played by Mel. She abandons her husband and children to help Ed and his brother Jack escape and accompanies them into the witchery wasteland. So this is Mel's first turn as an American in a film. Matthew Modine is his brother. And
based on, I believe there's based on a true story, is it not?
I think it
is. The Biddles brothers were true convicts.
It sounds like you're the only one that might have seen this one.
It was a very long time ago.
Yeah, me too.
But I, from my recollection, I really loved it.
Yeah, I seem to remember thinking it was okay. I think when I saw it, I mean, this is maybe 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
I thought it was a little bit on the long and dark side, because it was an emotional
film. It was a little melodramatic at times, definitely. Mm-hmm. I'll give you that. But do you remember there was a scene where they're in a horse-drawn carriage in the snow? That seems to really stick in my head, and I don't know why. I just remember a horse-drawn carriage in the snow. I think as they were escaping from the prison.
Okay.
Sorry, you have a comment?
No, nothing.
Did you not see this, Simon?
The copy I tried to find didn't quite work that well, and the library didn't have one, and I only had 3 days to find these movies, so...
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm just going to say, keep trying, because I thought it was a good movie.
I know. I did want to see it. Like, I do. And there's one other weird one I couldn't find on this. I was shocked.
84 was a big movie year for him. He did 3 films. So the second film is something called The River, which I think is another one you couldn't find.
Nope.
And it's Mel and Sissy Spacek.
It only got a release in Australia.
Okay, I remember it.
No, that is not true.
I remember it being a big deal at the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I couldn't find this one.
Remember Entertainment Tonight, I think, actually. actually running something.
Well, they actually did stuff on Entertainment Tonight instead of becoming what tabloid journalists.
The premise is farming family battles severe storms, a bank threatens to repossess their farm, and other hard times. They battle to save and hold onto their farm. I'm just looking for if there's anyone else. Scott Glenn is in it. No one else who really stands out. Andy Stahl. So, anyway, have you seen that, River?
I saw it, you know, 20 years ago, and I did watch it again recently for this podcast. And actually, watching it again, I found it very timely in the sense of the recession we are in and the hard times farmers are dealing based on either recession or drought or flooding, and really the difficulty a farming family has of keeping their farm, keeping it profitable, and raising a family. I found it really timely.
It's a universal story. I mean, like, things as diverse as, like, Little House on the Prairie through, like, movies like The Grapes of Wrath. Like, there's always room for a story about a family and a farm.
And survival.
Yes. It's a story that never gets old.
Now, I don't know if this... I don't recall whether this was a completely successful movie or if it made profit. But I do remember it in the theaters at the time, definitely.
Yeah, I do too. I don't remember it being that successful. I remember there was a lot of Mel that year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Year of Living Dangerously was a big hit on video. And then boom, 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 three movies in the theaters.
Yeah. Well, I think Sissy Spacek was well known at that time too. Like her, she was right in the prime of her career.
Yeah, Homelander's daughter and all that.
Yeah.
But I think the big film for him that year was The Bounty. Which was a remake of of an earlier film.
A second remake.
A second remake, interesting. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because in 1935 they did Mutiny on the Bounty with Clark Gable and Charles Laughton.
Mm-hmm.
Then around 1966 they did The Bounty with Mel...
Brando.
With Brando. Mm-hmm. And now this is the second remake. I mean, another story that just doesn't ever seem to get old.
Yeah. I mean, synopsis is familiar story. Lieutenant Bligh, Lieutenant Bligh's cruelty leads to a mutiny on the ship, led by Mr. Christian. It follows his efforts to get the men beyond the reach of the British retribution, and the voyage of Lieutenant Bligh to get his loyalists safely to East Timor in a tiny lifeboat.
Who was the director of this one?
Let me double check on that.
Dino film, though.
It was Roger Donaldson.
And good buddy Dino.
It was definitely an Anthony Hopkins tour, of course.
Yes.
As Lieutenant Bligh.
Yeah, big early role for him.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like a really fantastic performance as well. I remember liking the movie a lot when it came out. And you know, the scenes of the sailors in Polynesia and...
Lovely ladies.
The rebellion was actually more... if I remember the film properly, I had a lot of sympathy for Anthony Hopkins because he was trying to keep order on his ship, and they end up in Polynesia, and everybody's just loving the fact that the women are topless, the food's plentiful, there's lots to drink. They want to live the easy life on the beach, and he's trying to run a navy vessel. I mean... you know, he tries very hard with Mr. Christian, who's the liaison between the two, but eventually, you know, he just goes too far and Christian sides with the sailors.
Well, the problem with Christian is he's sleeping with the chief's daughter.
Right. His loyalties are definitely...
So, the one film I did, I thought this movie was very slow. Hopkins was fantastic. I had nothing with Gibson. I just didn't find the story interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, watching them dance, and just, I think it was the pacing didn't work for me.
Yeah.
But they're kind of starting at the beginning, so you know Hopkins survives.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing, though, is that it's a lot of story to tell. I mean, it's a slow burn story. I mean, because, you know, you have to establish how, you know, how difficult life on board a ship is. Then you have to set up how wonderful the South Sea Islands are by comparison with this ship. You have to introduce all the characters and build them up to the point where you understand why the mutiny happens. Because otherwise, it just has no impact. I mean, the fact is that the survivors of the mutiny bounty, their descendants are still on Pitcairn Island in the South Pacific. And Bligh did manage in an incredible feat of seamanship to get his loyalists back alive. I mean, it's a lot of story. I mean, this almost could have been told as two movies. It's a huge story.
Mm-hmm. I just find Blythe so uninteresting as a character. I mean, he's just so straight-laced, sort of doing his thing. I just didn't care after a while.
Well, I think that's a generational thing to me. I think
yes.
If you were raised in a certain time period, there was a lot more respect for the military and the procedure. And I remember this was a film that my grandfather loved. He was a big fan of this movie because he, as a person who worked on a Navy vessel during the Second World War, he understood the need for regiment and rules and regulations.
And discipline.
Discipline, yeah. I mean, not that there was much need for discipline on the Canadian vessel in Halifax Harbor, but...
But I get it, though. It didn't interest me. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the film.
But like Dev said, I think it had to be long and drawn out because there was so much to tell. So even editing, you know, if it was edited any differently, I think you would have had big gaps in the storytelling and you would have said, well, what the hell does that mean? Because something had been overlooked.
That's my issue. I just didn't have interest in the concept.
I'll tell you what my issue with it is. Does Gibson stand out in this movie? Or could it have been played by any number of English actors?
I think Liam Neeson stood out the most for me.
I think it could have been anyone else, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was a Mel Gibson movie. Like when I think of this movie, yes, I know he's in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know his name was used a lot to market it because he was on the rise of his career.
Yeah.
But I would say you could have put almost anybody in that role.
And here's
the intern?
Maybe not the intern.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, in the two previous remakes of the movie, you have Clark Gable, who was the biggest male star in Hollywood in the 30s, as Fletcher Christian. And then in the 60s, you had Marlon Brando, arguably the biggest male star of the 60s.
Right.
This was, like, the movie for the ultimate A-role actor.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they needed somebody who was at the top of their profession as opposed to a rising star to convey that level of...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they had that confidence that he was going to be that big superstar.
But he wasn't there yet. It's no criticism.
No, absolutely
like,
not. I don't say that as a criticism
at all.
No.
Okay, cool. So, marginal thumbs up for most people, mid-level.
Mm.
Okay, well, 1985 brought us the third Mad Max film, Beyond Thunderdome, and George Miller recruits everybody again to put on their sports clothes and ride rented cars.
Didn't someone wear feathers?
Master Blaster.
Master Blaster!
Tina Turner runs Bartertown. And basically, Max shows up to be a pawn in a decadent oasis of technological society. And when he's exiled, he becomes the deliverer of a colony of children that are sort of inside the...
And Kelvin,
yes.
You break a deal, face the wheel.
Yes. Of the three movies, I like this one. I think it's okay.
Oh.
It's pretty strong. Tina Turner is pretty good.
Oh.
As the Queen of Bartertown.
This movie dies after the first 20 minutes. Like somebody just erupted a week's worth of Chinese food in a bowl and flush.
All that methane gas.
It is one awful movie. It's
fine.
There
are classic moments in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Watching the guy fall into the pig shit totally described the whole movie to me. The Bartertown scenes are fine. My issue is not with Bartertown. It's when they kick him out, whatever his punishment was, and the kids find him. Really?
They hand in their newspeak. They have a weird way of talking, don't they?
Yeah, and I just did. And they think it's his person, and then he comes, and he has to go save the kids. But they go to Bartertown, then they try to film number two again.
The
end
scene. Bring back Bruce Spence as Jebediah the pilot.
Yeah.
The little helicopter.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I don't care. I like that scene. I'm like, hey, look, it's the guy from number two.
Mm-hmm.
He's the only thing good in the film is the end. When they go down the cage and they start chasing his son around.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the kid from the other one. I just didn't like this film.
I just like the Tina Turner song.
Yeah.
Not going to lie.
I think this movie's a big pile of
dude. In retrospect, I do think Road Warrior is a stronger movie.
Do you think?
This one still has its enjoyment. Oh. It's enjoyable on some level.
Put your head back in the sink.
Definitely ended the trilogy.
Well, they're supposed to make a fourth. You know,
right, now they keep threatening to.
No. Let me back this up. They were going to make a fourth.
Yeah.
The day 9/11 happened, they decided it was too dangerous to fly. The fourth was green-lighted. They're about to film it.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was a decade ago.
Yeah, and next year they're rebooting this.
Okay. Oh, rebooting it.
Next year, yeah, we're rebooting the whole
thing.
It's not
going to be Mount.
I don't think so. I think they're rebooting the whole thing. All
right, well.
I do not know.
I think Charlize Theron's in it. That's what I come up with.
Oh, wow.
Yes, actually, now that you've said her name, yes. Yes.
And I think it's a reboot, so. I just think this was an awful movie. I thought it was rushed.
Okay.
I thought the ending was the exact same ending as 2.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
it was like, okay, well, we defeated the big bad guy. You guys can go home now. Okay.
Well, on that note, shall we move on?
Yes, please.
All right. Well, just as he was wrapping up one trilogy, he would begin another series in his next movie, Lethal Weapon, as Martin Riggs joins veteran cop Murtaugh. Now, Riggs is a little homicidal. He's trying to kill himself because his wife died. He's having a hard time coping, and he's taking it out by taking a lot of risks in his policing. So.
Yes, and let's just say his partner, Murtaugh, very calm, cool, collected, stayed, play-by-the-rules kind of guy.
Nearing retirement, has a family, doesn't want to risk much. So they must learn to work together and stop a gang of drug smugglers. And this was directed by Richard Donner.
And just before we go into discussing the merits of the film, this is the template for all buddy cop movies that came after it. Whatever they were before, all movies involving a pair of police officers, no matter what the genre of film, stand in the shadow of this one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the lines of entrance, the language.
Yes.
Yeah. Although, arguably, this is not the first buddy cop movie.
No.
There are lots of prototype cop movies that preceded it,
but
like Nighthawks with Sylvester Stallone and Ruby Williams. And there are other movies in the 80s that are like that.
But this is the one that puts it all together.
It's a pinnacle of it. I think it's the pinnacle. Yeah.
Yeah. I think of 48 Hours.
But that's Cop and Con.
Yeah. Nighthawks.
I've never heard of Nighthawks.
Oh, you should
what?
Say
what?
I've heard of it, I just never saw it.
And I think Rutger Hauer is a villain.
Maybe I have seen it and don't remember it. I have no recollection of Nighthawks. That's all I've said.
Is a lot of fun.
Do you know Lethal Weapon's a Christmas movie?
Yes, I do.
Because he's buying a Christmas tree. Right at the beginning, his first bus is those guys at the Christmas.
Yeah, well, a lot of the Lethal Weapon movies are Christmas movies.
Die Hard was a Christmas movie of all times.
Anyway, but Lethal Weapon. I mean, who wants to start?
Go ahead, Glenn.
I thought it was okay. I thought it had very good scenes, like when the scene with the guy in the building, mm-hmm. the Christmas scene. I got a little bored by the end. I thought it just Gary Busey was a little strange in this. Like you started saying,
Gary Busey is strange.
Yes.
Yeah, you could definitely see him. Like, I just sort of wrapped up a little quick at the end. I didn't think there was really a lot of detective work, I guess, in this one.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, okay, Riggs is going to do this, Riggs is going to do that, Riggs is going to get caught, Riggs is going to go out, Riggs is going to win and save the day.
But they cause enough damage that the bad guys can't.
Oh, yeah, <yeah. laughs> they do more damage than anybody else.
Right, so the bad guys come looking for them.
Yes.
Don't they kidnap... no, that was another one.
That's the next one.
Deb, do you want to add anything? This was just... I just look at this movie and say, like, this was just a fun movie. And, you know, because... I mean, I'll be honest. I saw the second one, I saw the third one, I saw the fourth one, and by the end, it was just sort of like, oh, God, you know.
It's, you know, for a lot of action movies, I find them very hard to rewatch.
Yeah.
Because, you know the big action scene, or, you know the climax. But this one I actually can watch again, because there's that humor to it.
Yeah.
There's that buddy-buddiness. So I find, unlike a lot of cop drama, action, call it whatever you will, I don't have the desire to rewatch it.
This is just really well done, and I mean that as a compliment. Everybody's firing on all cylinders here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is a star-making performance. I mean, Mel Gibson, we knew him before from movies like Year of Living Dangerously. But after Lethal Weapon, Mel was a superstar. He was everywhere. This
well, because
really
he wasn't typecast either.
Yeah, he created
like
the character.
You look at his career, you know, The Year of Living Dangerously versus
Gallipoli,
very different time period, very different character.
Yeah.
You know, you compare that to The River, again, very different. So, whereas some people then got very typecast into an action movie, if you look at his career post-Lethal Weapon, mm-hmm. he's, again, not typecast in that action role mm-hmm. as well.
Bob, have you seen this movie? You've seen Lethal Weapon, I'm sure, in your travels.
Please yeah. say yes,
Bob. I have seen Lethal Weapon. It's
Woo-hoo!
Mel Gibson. I'm not a fan of Mel Gibson. That's why I've only seen very few of his movies here, but Year of Living Dangerously is one, Lethal Weapon is two, there's a couple other ones we're coming to later, but, okay, I had to watch Lethal Weapon because I heard good things about it, I watched it, it was okay, I enjoy him and Danny Glover working together.
It's like me and you, Bob.
Sure. Film Pass, you and me, yeah, that's it.
Okay, who's who?
I'm Murtaugh.
What, are you too old?
I'm Jeffrey Riggs.
He's got to be Riggs. He'll do anything.
And
jump over people to get an autograph.
Kevin's the captain.
You know.
Right. This movie actually made Danny Glover a huge star, too.
It did.
It really was quite popular. He was a good man.
I agree with you.
I have rewatched this on numerous occasions. Made even more popular by the sequel, but I don't think we're there yet.
No, one before the sequel.
So after he did this, he took part in an ensemble cast piece called Tequila Sunrise with Michelle Pfeiffer and Kurt Russell, Raul Julia, directed by Robert Towne. The summary is Mac McCusick is an unlikely drug dealer who wants to go straight. His oldest and best friend, Nick Frescia, is now a cop. Who is assigned to investigate and bring him to justice. Now, Mac is very attracted to Joanne, the owner of a stylish restaurant. Nick gets close to Joanne, attempting to know where Mac, and it's back and forth, whatever.
Two glamorous men and a beautiful woman.
Exactly. Michelle Pfeiffer in her prime. So, like, anyone want to say something about this movie?
You know, I saw it so long ago, I don't really remember who played who and who was the drug dealer. I remember flashy suits and not really a movie that stayed with me, mm-hmm. you know. Kind of, you know.
Kind of like the Miami Vice of movies.
You know what? That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
Really, that's a great analogy for it.
Gibson is the drug dealer.
Gibson was the drug dealer. Okay, yeah, see, it just didn't stay with me.
I remember, did you see this one?
Yes, I did a long time ago, but all I can remember is just so much pretty. Everything in this movie looks great. The actors look great. It's beautifully shot. It's totally shallow.
Yeah, there's the substance was lacking.
It's like eating a whole can of Pringles. I mean,
it's polished, but it's not beloved. And nobody will want to come back and revisit that.
Right. Yeah, I think we can move on.
No, you can't take the crow.
Sorry.
That's another
edition. Brandon.
I think you should see it, though. But anyway, so let's pass on Tequila Sunrise. A little bit of substance, style, but no substance.
Correct.
Right? And then we're right back into Lethal Weapon territory with Lethal Weapon 2. A huge hit in 1989.
Oh, yeah. Massive.
Batman and Lethal Weapon 2 were the movies.
Well,
right?
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
And Indiana Jones and the thing.
Yeah, it was just a huge year of movies.
But anyway, Lethal Weapon 2 was the same.
Go ahead.
I think we start to see a lot of big explosions in these movies. You can tell the budget was upped a lot for this movie.
Was this also Richard Donner directed?
Yeah, directed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Joe Pesci.
Which he works well in this film.
This is my favorite of all of them.
I agree with Karen. This is probably my favorite.
The evil South Africans. You couldn't get more evil in 1989 than South Africans.
Diplomatic immunity.
Goddamn peppers.
I just like how the Drachnoids, I like the way it works. I thought there was some actual detective work done in this one.
And the humor with Joe Pesci. Come on.
Pesci was good.
Hey, fuck you up the drive-through.
Every guy fell in love with Rika, Patsy Kensit. It was the love interest in that.
Beautiful
she was,
girl.
Yeah, very pretty.
Who goes through the drive-thru? Joe Pesci was great in this.
That was great, yeah.
And Tony had a laundromat as well.
Mm-hmm.
I now know how Wonder Bunny.
Yeah, and you know, this is just a really great movie. Like, I actually don't have much to say because everything's just... This is one of those movies where everything is just as it should be. The bad guys are evil, the heroes are heroic, things blow up real good.
And there's a funny sidekick.
Absolutely.
Hey, the
late
condom 80s commercial
perfection.
Is good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I also, I do...
His daughter in the condom commercial.
The condom commercial.
Okay, and then I do like how as you get into the end of this movie, how they tie in how Riggs' wife was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that connection as well.
You're right. They did tie
in. The guy was the guy.
Yeah, and that did not see that coming. Yeah. Did not see it coming.
I don't think there's any way. Cause they tell you that they wanted to kill Riggs back then.
Yeah.
But they killed his wife by accident.
Because she was in his car.
Yeah. No, I mean, this cemented that franchise as like the huge action franchise of the 80s, but along with Die Hard.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Hard, so.
Absolutely great movie.
Highly recommended.
Yes.
All right. Then we followed it up by starring in Hamlet.
Helena Bonham Carter, Alan Bates.
Glenn Close, Ian Holm.
Lots of good actors in
Paul
this
Paul Schofield.
One.
And then there's Mouth.
Apropos of this movie, Mel Gibson made an appearance on Sesame Street in full Hamlet costume to talk with Elmo.
No way!
I was babysitting that summer, and the little kids were watching Sesame Street, and I was like, and I remember going, oh my God.
Can we find that on YouTube?
I damn well hope so, because it's Mel Gibson going... starting the to-be-or-not-to-be speech, and Elmo announcing, I'm Elmo.
Oh, get the fuck out of here. You need to see that now.
Oh, it's great. It's great. It's probably the best thing about the movie.
It's commercial messages.
I'm sorry. Before I go home, I need to see this.
We're working on it. I have my crackpot and turn on it right
everything.
Now.
Everything.
Oh, hands down.
So have my Kevin. Go.
So, directed by Franco Zeffirelli. I mean, it's Hamlet. I thought he was probably the weakest thing about this movie. The performances were fantastic, but...
He's a little weak.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's Hamlet.
Glenn Close, really a little young to be his mom. Like, the way they played
true.
That.
The way they played it, but I thought she was good, I have to say. She was...
We're going to enjoy Muppet Monster Feast Theater after the show.
Oh my God, this day can't get any better.
I have it queued up for us. So.
Oh.
Actually, I could probably watch it on TV. Anyway, go ahead.
Well,
Sorry.
I don't think it is the best version of Hamlet. I think the Kenneth Branagh directed version from several years
later. Which is
later,
on our list.
Is far superior.
It's on our list for a future show.
And
I have seen it.
Okay. All right, let's. Yeah, that one, we'll discuss the merits of that later, but far superior.
Well, Hamlet's one of those stories, it's like the Bambi story. Like, it just gets remade again and again and again. And it's one of those people where you can just do it, make as many versions as you want. It's inexhaustible.
But do I have to watch them?
No.
Okay, good. I just get bored of remakes.
No, I agree. I don't think everything needs to be remade. Clearly, I don't.
So, are we seeing Gibson as an actor finally?
I think so, but I don't think Hamlet was a wise choice for him.
I think he's trying too hard.
Yeah, I agree with
this. He's like, I'm going to do Shakespeare and make it popular.
Well, yeah, because Hamlet is the role for serious, you know, classically trained actors. This is the part. And I guess he wanted to make his stance that he's a serious thespian. He doesn't just, you know, bomb around in cars and...
I mean, I give him A for effort. I will.
Yeah, it's ambitious.
Definitely. And again, we don't see that typecast being, you know, given to his direction. But I think, you know, if you move on to what he did next, I think, you know, much, much more suited
mm-hmm.
to him.
Cool. Okay. So not much to say about that one. Simon, you're quick, you're passing.
Oh, I'm just tired. My kids were up all last night.
Oh.
So.
Well, next movie on our list is also from 1990, and that's Air America.
Same year as Helma?
Yeah. Mel Gibson and Robert Downey Jr.
Very young.
A young pilot finds himself recruited into a covert and corrupt CIA airlift organization operating in Vietnam War era labs.
And based on real events, which
yes,
I did not know.
Yes, CIA did run Air America out of labs. Yeah.
I thought that was kind of weird because I just watched Gallipoli and Living Dangerously, then I watched Air America right afterwards. I can't say I liked this film at any time. I thought it was okay. I thought I told the story. I didn't find any of the characters really necessarily likable or interesting. I didn't see really any story development in it. It seemed like this happened, we're going to do this, this happened.
I liked it, but I appreciated it more sort of as that buddy-buddy relationship developed in
but
the movie.
It never developed.
Well, you know, there was... I mean, again, going back, I haven't seen it in quite some time, but I do remember liking it, and I think it was more based on the relationship between Robert Downey Jr. and Mel Gibson and sort of the antics of their relationship.
But that's my problem. There weren't enough antics. There was nothing really to bring them together, and then Mel Gibson going, oh, you need my help again, buddy? And going to bail him out because Robert Downey Jr. crashed another aircraft.
What I want to know is, why was this movie made? Like, what was the compelling reason to have this movie?
Well, that's my problem. Because they wanted to show that the CIA was running drugs in Vietnam.
I think somebody had a script somewhere that was an issue script about the CIA doing this in Vietnam War. And someone said, let's make it a buddy picture with two young stars. We'll throw Mel Gibson, who's arguably one of the biggest superstars in the world, along with with Robert Downey Jr., who was kind of young...
The up-and-comer.
Up-and-comer, yeah. I mean, he'd done a couple movies but never been huge. Like, he wasn't a huge star.
No. No, and also, you know, pre-druggy.
Yes.
Robert Downey Jr., you know, headlining the news.
Right.
I just thought this movie was lame. I didn't even know it was real until I got to the end and explained everything that happened.
I clearly knew it was a real story, and I'm not sure why. If that
remember
was
the end? The end was kind of funny. The end was my favorite.
Ago.
Well, the end of the movie is Mel Gibson, they tell you he had three businesses, they all failed, but he wins the lottery. And it continues on that you find out that Robert Downey Jr. had fixed the lottery, so Mel Gibson could win it.
Ah, okay.
I thought that was kind of funny.
Okay.
No, I just thought the movie was kind of dull.
Yeah, it's not a great movie by any stretch. It's okay. It's like a time waster. I remember liking it at the time. Because I like the actors. I think they both give strong performances here. Nancy Travis from So I Married an Ass Murderer is in this movie as well. But I didn't think it was a great movie by any stretch.
I just thought it was kind of dull. And I have such a crush on Nancy Travis still to this day, and I don't know why.
Yeah, I got to roll my eyes at that one. All
yeah,
right.
I don't know why. I can't explain it.
All right.
All right, our second last movie of the first half of Mel's career is a film called Burn on a Wire, which he did with Goldie Hawn. He plays an FBI informant. Oh, no, I don't know what it is. An FBI informant has kept his new identity secret for 15 years, but now an old flame has recognized him and the bad guys are back for revenge. Now, first off...
Is that the write-up?
Yeah, that's
right. Totally horrible. That's not what happens in any way.
Okay.
I just watched this movie.
Here's another one. Here's another longer synopsis. Rick has been given a new identity by the FBI for helping convict a drug-dealing FBI agent. 15 years later, his former fiancé recognizes him. Rick's FBI minder has been replaced by a corrupt agent who helps the drug dealer FBI agent and makes his accomplice locate him. There are many subsequent chase scenes of Rick and
again, close, but
that
not correct.
Closer. Mm-hmm. Closer.
Steven Tobolberg, you know the guy I'm talking about. I love that guy. He's a great actor.
Tobolowsky.
Okay, the whole reason this movie starts is the guys that Rick put in prison, David Carradine, gets out of prison. And they come looking for him. Goldie Hawn, he's working at a gas station in Detroit. Goldie Hawn shows up, recognizes him, they talk for a bit, he pretends it's not him. Mm-hmm. And that's really it. And then, you know, the movie takes, then they accidentally, of course, the killers show up that night to kill Rick, because Rick phones his agent guy, says, you know what?
His contact,
I've been figured out, I'm leaving. I've become somebody else, but the contacts he used to work with retired, Stephen Tobolowsky's taken over, he's corrupt. The movie takes over that. I found this a very 80s hijink movie, as the hijinks, you know, ensue at the same time, like Goldie Hawn does something stupid, so something happens to Mel. Mel has to figure it out. They move on to the next, and it's just continually bumbles along the way. And of course, yeah, let's go back and revisit who he used to be in all these places. Oh, we love you so much, Mel.
And like all these gorgeous women appear out of nowhere.
That's it.
Who just love him for reasons, well, I could never figure it out.
But that's the whole movie. Like, he goes back to relive his past, and obviously at the end, he gets back to the beginning when he first became, you know, whatever, undercover person.
Informant, yeah.
Identity. Some hijinks appear in a zoo because Goldie Hawn's on the board. Hee-hee-hee. And I'm like, this movie sucks. Just a total, horrible, everything I hate about the 80s movies.
Yeah, including Mel Gibson's enormous mullet.
Yeah.
Awful.
You know what? My problem with this movie is, first off, Goldie Hawn is significantly older than he is in my mind. So, 15 years ago, he was like 10. and she was like 20. So, it just doesn't work. There's no chemistry there, in my opinion.
Absolutely not. And Goldie Hawn is a horrible actress.
All I really remember is the song.
Like a bird on a wire.
Like it. But, you know, I mean,
I just remember the scene where he's in a lion's pit.
That's the end of the movie.
And then you're the end of the movie.
That's the very end.
I think, you know, it was an enjoyable 2 hours of entertainment. But, you know.
No, it's not enjoyable.
No, I didn't mind it back then. But to rewatch it, it does become dated and,
very dated.
You see the holes.
Holes.
Yes. Well, the other thing is, it's like everybody's trying too hard in this movie. Like, it's very strange.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's like, well, we don't have any dialogue or plot, so we'll just have the wind blow what
rolling
on skirt up so you can see she's wearing thong underwear. Like, it's the whole movie.
She didn't show her boobs, so it's a little bored.
All right, let's see the last movie on the list.
Forever Young.
Forever
I
Young.
I want to be forever
which is an
young.
Awesome film.
I'm going to
Mel plays a test pilot in 1939 who asks his best friend to make him a guinea pig at a cryogenics experiment. He wants to be frozen for a year so he doesn't have to watch his love dying in a lying in a coma because she's an Indian.
She gets hit by a car.
Yeah. The next thing he knows, he awakes and it's 1992. So it's very Captain America.
Captain America throws his mighty shield.
There's no shield in this movie, which is sad.
Jamie Lee Curtis, isn't it? Elijah Wood, isn't it? As a kid.
George Wentz.
I don't remember this movie at all.
Underwhelming.
Yeah.
It's one of those. Go ahead, Karen.
I did see it, and I think I cried through it because it was so long and drawn out.
No, it's only hour 30.
Boring.
It's an hour 30.
Was it? Oh my god, it seemed like 8 hours. Wow.
Just one of those emotional roller coaster ones.
But not even, like, I mean, yes, there were sad moments, but it was just like, oh good god, get on with it.
Well, I watched it on the weekend because we prepped for the show. Mm-hmm. And the movie sets you up for your heartstrings. Like, you know, he's supposed to propose to his girlfriend at the time. They're in the diner. He sets it up. He can't do it. He just can't get the will. So his girlfriend gets hit by a car as soon as she walks out of the diner. She never gets to ask her. Oh, poor Mel. And then he goes to his friend George. He's talking to George Wendt. And George Wendt's talking about the guy who's supposed to go to the cryogenic chamber, failed the health exam. He's too much of a drunk. They can't use him. And Mel says, let me do it. George says, no, I don't want you to. Well, I have to. I may never see her again. I can't cope with her in a coma. let me do this for the year. Well, you know.
Please, it put me in a coma.
So 1993, these Elijah Woods and buddies are playing. They wake Mel up. He gets out. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, the kid leaves his coat there. He goes to Elijah Woods' house, drops his coat off. And they're kind of like, and Jimmy, of course, lets him sleep over because he saves her. He's living in their treehouse. And saves her from her abusive ex-boyfriend. I'm like, really? This chick just lets him come in. Oh, here, have a place to stay. I'm like, here we go. And then as the film goes on, the cryogenics are kicking in, and he's rapidly aging. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Then the government wants to get him. So, you know, they have to hide him. And, of course, Jamie Curtis's new boyfriend just happens to be a doctor. So this and that. So they get to the end. I'm just giving you guys a very fast version of this. And trust me, you want the fast
version. You want the fast version. Speed it up more, Simon.
I'm almost to the end. So he flies the plane that he used to fly. Because he has to get to his girlfriend across the thing. So he meets his girlfriend. Find out she's really alive. She never married, never had kids. He shows up and goes, will you marry me? Yes. And that's the end of your movie. Whoop-dee-doo.
So it's a romantic comedy about the upper
West. It's not a comedy. It's definitely not a comedy.
No.
Straight romance.
Drama.
Drama romance. I don't know who this movie's made for, because it's
not fun. Us.
Okay.
Wow, that description even put Kevin to sleep.
I'm just waking up again. All right, that wraps up Mel Gibson Part 1. At some point in the near future, we'll be revisiting him in Part 2, looking at his 1992 to the current acting chops from Lethal Weapon 3 through to Beaver.
We do have one last thing to go over, Kev.
What's that?
What did Kevin buy?
Well, what did everybody else buy?
How about Waking Up in Rio?
I thought you bought hundreds of...
I didn't bring them with me. I didn't bring anything. I didn't have time. I had to carry all the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Bob bought Miss Congeniality and Benjamin Buttons.
Yes, I did.
Karen bought himself.
Big Bang Season 4.
Ooh.
The original Straw Dogs with Dustin Hoffman.
Good choice.
And a new John Pinette comedy DVD.
I didn't know you know who he was.
Love John Pinette.
He's not exactly like that in person.
He is. He kissed me on my birthday.
I remember Montreal when he was he was handing out CDs to people. Listen to me.
Yeah, yeah. He rocks the place. Kevin, what did you buy?
Kevin, did you buy anything?
No.
Okay,
yeah, Kevin, she did. She bought some hair products, some kitty litter for the cats.
I bought Big Bang Season 4. I bought... Fringe Season 3. I bought Dexter Season 5. I bought X-Men First Class.
Excellent.
I bought Thor.
Excellent.
I bought The Frighteners.
Excellent.
I bought the giant Citizen Kane box set.
Even better.
Well, you have never seen Citizen Kane. How can you say that?
I bought Rock and Rule.
Really?
On Blu-ray.
Wow.
Wow.
My name is Mock. Thanks a lot. I bought, I bought Star Wars. Yes, Debbie, I bought Star Wars. The
Ooh.
Blu-ray box set with all six movies.
And really bad box art.
Yes, bad box art. I bought an amazing French movie that I want you all to watch at some point called The Extraordinary Adventures of Adèle Blanc-Sec.
Yes.
Directed by Luc Besson.
Well, oh, Luc Besson directed all watch.
Subtitled?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, let's save it until everybody sees it and then review it.
I just said it was wonderful. Okay. I won't say anything more.
Did I get anything else? I got...
That's a light week for you, Kev.
It's been a while since we've done a show, so I'm trying to catch up on
it. Yeah, it has been a while, so I'm sure there's stuff he's forgetting.
Yeah.
We're delayed.
I did get Brave and the Bold Batman Season... 2.1 or
0.2
or something like that. The second half.
I was way too welcome to one big bundle.
I got The Count of Monte Cristo. The Jim Caviezel one.
Speaking of movies that have been made 800 times.
Yeah.
And Jim Caviezel, obviously.
And I got Snatch.
Love Snatch.
So I don't know if we reviewed that or not.
You ever read the list?
I look at it all the time, sure. I just don't know what we've watched sometimes.
On the website, other movies we review, there's a whole section.
The
The website is www.extrafeatures.ca.
I think it's super.
Okay, that's it.
I don't know why.
It was next to the canoe enter.
I got the People versus George Lucas on DVD. If you're borrowing
that. I did, because you asked me to watch it.
I'm guessing that's it.
Okay, that's it. I'm out of here.
Castle,
shut up. Two. Let's go.
Jesus Christ. I'm sorry. I'm
tired.
Sorry, kids. Simon's tired.
Aaron's got a pee.
Bob, the intern, or sorry, intern, you're what?
Well, he's got like the 24-hour pizza place. He's hungry.
He's hungry. I'm tired myself, but I'm going to read on the internet.
And I'm ready for Monsterpiece Theater.
Yay!
Hey, all right.
I'm Simon.
I'm Karen.
Intern. Dad.
And if they make
I'm
it.
The Crypt Keeper. Sorry.
And if they make it, Simon makes us watch it and review it.
Yes, Jimmy. Good job there.